Okay, welcome back. This is often a very crazy business. If you could see what was going on this end of the microphone and trying to catch people in there, we can't. Nurse Ann is not answering her phone. And you can't leave a voicemail. It's not set up for it. So I don't know what's going on. We're still trying to get her, so hopefully we will. If not, we'll carry on. There's just a lot going on here. And what I think the biggest message is, and once again, I want to preface it by saying, neither Erica nor I like negative news. We wish more than anything that we could tell the vaxxed and the shed upon that things are stabilizing, at least. Or there's a little hope here, a real honest ray of you can be happy about it in some fashion. But there's absolutely nothing that we can suggest that should make anyone less than frightened out of their shoes. It's that bad. Nobody is getting better. And that is very difficult to report. But that's the truth. And we will never tell you anything but the truth as far as we can determine what it is. And sometimes that's not real easy. But Erica digs, I dig, we watch, we listen, we learn, we present. And it's up to you to make the ultimate decision on what you want to believe. Hello there, young lady. Welcome back.
Hello. Thank you.
That's a very robust.
So we don't have our guest tonight.
Not so far. Not so far. She.
All right. Well.
I don't know.
We'll wing it.
Anyway, that's what this business is about. People don't show up. I had, what was it last night? Last night, James Karolak was all set to come on to talk about the Deagle.com numbers and projections, and he didn't answer his phone. Either one of his phones. I think people forget. I've got the email right here confirming he'd be on, but don't know.
I've never forgotten.
No, you don't. It's that $5,000 a month that keeps you honest.
Yeah.
Now, here's a story.
Only.
If only. If hell, I'd be in heaven with that. Instead, I'm stuck with you. Well, that's heavenly. That's heavenly, I must say. By the way, when the big debate or debit, as I'd rather refer to it, is scheduled for tomorrow night. Will yours truly be watching? I'm not a masochist. No. And when, again, Fox News reports that Diaper Joe is 2 points ahead of Trump, not that Trump's anything to write home about, but this thing is crazy. They're really nuts. And it's going to get worse. I think we're going to see unexpected, shocking developments, several, between now and the so-called election day. I think they're going to keep this thing so unbalanced. People will not be able to focus on the invader vote, which is apparently growing by the minute. These people are all registering to vote for Biden. That's what they're being told. It's so much chicanery going on. It's really crazy. Yeah. Okay, very good. All right, we have connected with Nurse Ann. We'll bring her on in just a few minutes. We got one story I want to bring up here and talk about. And it's titled this, The Spike Protein's Obliteration of ACE2 Receptors and the Induction of Irreversible Oxidation via NOX5 Activation. Irreversible Oxidation. That's not good. You know that. This is if anything, this is a bioweapon of oxidation. It'll lead to systemic small vessel disease. The endothelium will be destroyed. Whether it's a blood vessel or an artery, it doesn't really matter. The cells are pretty much the same. It's going to be a very difficult ride for a lot of people. And just to back up a little bit, you look at all these social media sites and you follow the trend of what's being talked about, what people are complaining about, and so forth. And again, just to be a little bit redundant, because it is the truth and it is tragic, but we're not surprised, frankly. Nobody is getting appreciably better. There's no resolution for for the damage that has been inculcated into the recipients of the viral injection, the so-called vax. It's nothing more than a bioweapon. And those who have been shed on severely, seriously, you know the picture. And we keep watching. And I keep hoping that one day we'll be able to report something that is really, truly positive and is proven to be really, truly positive. Maybe that day will come. But in the meantime, we're going to lose a lot more people. Okay. The spike protein's obliteration of ACE2 and the oxidation angle. Well, that's Walter Chestnut's work. What do you think about that?
I think he's spot on. Just to explain what happens when that ACE2 receptor is disabled, that's actually an enzyme that's responsible for converting angiotensin 2 back to angiotensin 1. And when it's not available to do that job, you will get ongoing chronic inflammation. And
This is a weapon of oxidation inflammation. We got to remember.
Yeah,
that
so the minute that ACE2 receptor gets occupied by the spike, the body responds by churning out inflammation through NOx, in this case NOx5, that's NADPH right. oxidase. So that's how the body generates inflammation. And it starts producing superoxide radicals to fight or combat or still an area. But the problem is that that's just the beginning of a cascade of free radical damage that can ensue. And some of the things that happen is that it can knock off copper from its carrier proteins, and it can knock off iron from its carrier proteins. So you have free metals that are roaming around doing damage, also contributing to oxidative stress and more inflammation. And then those metals are not bioavailable. They're in the wrong oxidation state. They're not attached to their regulatory protein, so they can't function in the way they should. And, you know, we're seeing issues with iron, and we're also seeing issues with copper. People are becoming copper deficient and copper toxic at the same time because they don't have the ability to regulate that metal. And that is probably what's causing a lot of the neurological issues. You know, you've got plenty of copper in most cases. Even if it's not in the blood, it'll get sequestered in the liver and cause problems there. And then you don't have the copper where you need it. And the nerve cells are, you know, very susceptible to copper dysregulation and the brain. It's really, you know, when you realize that you cannot turn this off because the ACE2 receptor now or the ACE2 enzyme is right. disabled. And right. in some cases, people are making antibodies to the ACE2, so it's being destroyed that way as well.
Oh, how crazy. See, there's example number, 122, about how diverse this diabolically disastrous bioweapon is. It does so many things to destroy the body, destroy life. It's anti-life as we know it. This is awful.
Yeah.
Wow.
And you know, the fact is that so far there doesn't appear to be any way of turning off this mRNA or, I don't know to what extent the J&J keeps on giving, but...
There's some jabber about that now that they've got an off switch, but...
We talked about that. What was it?
Long time.
Was it Monday or last week?
Yeah, but it's
McCullough's
been...
new paper here proposing the small interfering RNA or these other RNA ribotac things that are going to supposedly neutralize the code for the spike protein. But
don't hold your breath, friends. We hope.
Don't hold your breath.
But don't hold your breath, okay? One other thing we want to mention, Allison C., there's a story out from Science Alert. Garlic, think Allison C., could be a secret weapon to keep down your glucose and your cholesterol. So there's another big plus for Allison C., which is, of course, the active ingredient in garlic. All right? It's very important. This is a great product. In fact, I have a friend who has a dog who got a laceration between his toes and the webbing between his toes. And it apparently got infected real fast, and green, pus was coming out, and I said, "Yo, geez, you got to get on that right now." And then the dog stopped eating and drinking, which suggests sepsis. The bacteria was spreading throughout the dog's blood, all over his body, all the major organs. That'll kill you. So I had him literally give him two Allicin C to start. The dog was about 80 pounds. And then one three times a day. And within 24 hours, the dog started eating and drinking again. And I had him keep dunking the dog's, so I suggested that he keep dunking the dog's wound with hydrogen peroxide and drain it. And that worked, and it's looking really good now. But your best friends can't tell you. You got to keep your eye on them. And if they get sick, I mean, he could have taken this dog to a vet, $1,000 bill, easy, easy. But he was able to cure it with Allicin C. At least it looks that way at this point. The dog's way better. So the same for you. This is the most dynamic, panoramic, broad-spectrum, all-natural antibiotic, antiviral on the planet. And I would urge you to always have it in the medicine cabinet, along with Bio Superfood. Now, those are sponsors, but I wouldn't have them as sponsors if they were anything less than absolutely fabulous products, and they are. All right, we'll stop right there. Now, let's go and see what Nurse Anne is up to. Sorry to have woken you up, friend, but welcome.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. You work awfully hard, and you need to rest. You need it. No problem.
I actually I took an injury to my back, and I'm being a chiropractor, and I'm getting what's called non-surgical spinal decompression. It's helping. It's helping a lot, and it's allowing me to work. But
a good chiropractor is worth his or her weight in gold. That's the crucial. Mm-hmm. What, did you try to lift somebody up again that was too heavy?
That's what prompted it, and then it just brought the old injury back even more so. So, yeah.
I see.
But now I'm absolutely not lifting at all, and still going to work with this. But this treatment is really helping.
Oh, good.
I can't say enough about it, but it does make me very tired afterwards. That was the only thing.
That's very understandable. People don't know. Most people don't know their own physiology. I'm not knocking anybody. You just don't know. You ask where your kidneys are. They don't know. Most people, they don't. And they also don't know that out of your spine comes every nerve that controls every major organ in your body. And if your spinal vertebra are compressed and pinching down or leaning down on that nerve, it'll cut that nerve function and nerve performance by 75% minimum. So all of a sudden your kidneys are not getting proper neurological stimulation or direction or anything else. Just for example. So keeping the spine straight is so essential. And most people just honestly can't grasp that. They don't have experience with it. Chiropractic, good chiropractic is essential. So I'm glad you're able to do that. And by the way, the nerves coming out of the spine, let's say the nerve that goes to your liver or nerves, if you put a dime on that nerve, just that much weight alone will cut that nerve function by 75 to 85%. Just the weight of a dime. So when you think about vertebra being compressed on nerves coming through the vertebra toward the organs, you get the picture. So that's one important thing about chiropractic. So, and it will make you tired after you get your back straightened out, for sure. All of a sudden you've got all this energy.
I actually wrote a paper on this back in nursing school, because I actually had a herniated disc at the time. And this,
right.
I went to a doctor. Of course, I went to a medical doctor first, and they said, try the medications and PT. And then they said, oh, no, you'll need surgery. And then they sent me to a neurosurgeon.
Oh, no.
Of course, the neurosurgeon was like, oh, you'll need back surgery. I said, oh, absolutely not. So here
not
I am again, out doing my own research, and the chiropractor introduced me to this treatment. And I'd say within three or four treatments, I actually had the herniated disc corrected. And it was a bad herniated disc at the time. So I actually wrote a paper on it in nursing school to actually basically tell the visitors how well worth this treatment was. And the thing about it is it's not a treatment covered by insurance, so it's expensive. And this is what was my big push, was to, you know, that insurance companies need to consider this, and a lot of people wouldn't have to have back surgeries. And the studies have shown that...
The tragic irony of it is, what many back surgeons end up doing is by extension, the same thing a chiropractor will do. It realigns properly the spinal vertebra. Think about it. It's pretty much the same thing. So anyhow, enough about chiropractic here. We played a video last time out that Nurse Ann called us about and wanted to respond to. And there was a doctor correctly talking about the dangers of going into a hospital now. And he said if you put an adult in a hospital, an older adult, a senior citizen, whatever, without somebody to be there to advocate for them, at least most, if not all the time, he said, you should be arrested for child abandonment and child abuse. And he made a good point. But then he got into talking about nurses, which can be done correctly or it can be over the top, and you got to be careful about that, because nurses, of course, some are good, some are awful. Some will follow directions no matter what the directions are. They have no conscience, or they don't have the backbone to stand up to a doctor and say, no, I'm not doing this, whatever, because they'll get fired. I understand that. But anyway, it's a complicated issue. So we have Nurse Ann, who is, and I'll say this without any reservation, one of the great nurses of our time, and she knows the inside story. So I'm going to play a little bit from this doctor again to see what he says, and we'll stop it and listen to Nurse Ann's response. Now, he's just getting to the point where there's no time mechanism on Instagram videos. You don't know where you are. It's just a video. There's no way. There's no slide showing the progress. There's no time stamp, so you kind of get lucky. Anyhow, he's just talking about how heparin is being given to patients up, right and left, no matter what the problem in many cases. So let's find out what he says.
Shots three times a day. Heparin's a blood thinner. And I was discussing with the nurse, why are you giving this patient heparin three times a day when they're getting up, walking, they're eating, they're going to the bathroom, and they're going to sleep in this bed? Don't you do the same thing at home? Would you give yourself a heparin injection at home every night? They say, no, I wouldn't. So why are you doing it to the patients, causing more harm? Okay, the patients can't sleep. Every 2 hours, they get interrupted all the time by nursing staff, by beeping machines. Well, over a period of time, with that patient's not seeing the sun, they're not going outside, they're stuck in a room with artificial light, they're going to go into a psychosis. And they're not sleeping. And their cortisol level is going to shoot up. Their immune system is going to be even more suppressed. No one thinks or has the brain capacity to say, let's let this patient sleep for 8 hours so they can get a great night and feel better tomorrow. No, it doesn't exist in a hospital. So the longer you are there, the higher your chances of morbidity and mortality, which is equivalent to death. So now that you're in a psychosis because you haven't slept in a week, they want to put you on psych meds. Geniuses, right? Instead of letting you sleep in a room for 8 hours. Okay, and then if you end up contracting a small infection, instead of pinpointing what antibiotic they should give you, they'll throw an AK-47 of vancomycin and zosyn, which is very broad spectrum. The problem is this kills off your gut microbiome, and we know through studies that killing off the gut microbiome will lead to severe anxiety and depression, which also suppresses your immune system, which makes you more susceptible to having repeat infections and having superimposed infections, and then contracting things like hospital-acquired pneumonia or a hospital-acquired urinary tract infection. So they don't really think about what the consequences are of what they're doing. I asked a nurse in a hospital when I was being a patient advocate for somebody, hey, have you checked this patient's vitamin D3 levels? You know, they have malabsorption issues. No, we don't do that. Well, don't you think it's beneficial to give that patient a shot of vitamin D3 when they're in the hospital, get their levels above 60? There's published studies showing there's reduction in morbidity and mortality. There is a decreased stay in the ICU when patients have optimal vitamin D3 levels. But something that costs them $2 to give you a shot of vitamin D3, they refuse to do. Then you'll talk to them, can you give the patient magnesium for proper cellular function? Oh, no, we don't do that. The magnesium levels are normal. Well, yes, because you're not testing red blood cell magnesium. You're not testing the right type. You're not doing the labs correctly to understand. Anyone can receive magnesium as long as they have proper kidney function. You can give it to anyone in high doses, and they're going to do absolutely great, and it's going to help them. Hey, can you give this patient glutathione with an injection? Oh, no, we don't know what that is. Oh, you don't know what the master antioxidant of the body is. So you're willing to pump in thousands of dollars of antibiotics for your own profit, but you won't help that patient receive a glutathione infusion in the hospital. It makes sense. Then you ask them something about vitamin C. Hey, can you give this patient high-dose IV vitamin C? They have a severe infection. You can see the published studies showing that there's increased efficacy of providing IV vitamin C when patients have a bacterial infection. Oh, no, sorry, we don't do that. The bottle of vitamin C costs $50. They refuse to spend $50 to get you out of that hospital because they don't want to give you that medication.
Okay, Nurse Ann, your turn. Go to it.
All right. Yeah. Okay, so I heard this Monday night, and all right, I don't disagree with what he's saying about the medication. That's not my issue. He's addressing it to the wrong person. That's my issue.
Right. So, he didn't go up the food chain high enough. He should have gone further.
Yeah. He went for the fish instead of the shark. And his own peer, who he probably went to med school with, is probably this person who's ordering all of this stuff, for starters.
That could be.
Now, I agree that there is no rhyme or reason for somebody to have heparin three times a day if they're getting out of bed and walking and doing all of that, all of the things that they would normally do at home. So here's the thing. A skilled or experienced nurse will go in and ask the patient, do you want to actually take this heparin since you're up and moving around and you're doing all the things that you would functionally do at home? There isn't really any reason to give this to you if you don't want it, and allow the patient to refuse. That is how I would approach it. An experienced nurse would approach it that way. And a lot of nurses don't give it. So the nurse he was speaking to sounds like he wasn't very experienced. That was the thing. But the biggest issue I had was the other thing he said about how they're getting constantly woken up and the patients are basically going through almost a psychosis or a delirium. They actually have it is a real thing. With all the beeping and the noising. Well, first of all, you're in a hospital. So that's the thing. You may be around a lot of noise and a lot of beeping. That is the case. There may be needs for you to have to be woken up every couple of hours to have your vital signs checked. If you're on some very high medications, like I'm going to speak to the ICU here for a second. If you're on medications where we're titrating them, you need to know how their vitals are, whether their heart rate is in a safe place or if their blood pressure is in a safe place. Now, they have the machine set up where they will take the vitals automatically, so you don't necessarily need to wake the patient up. And they can also give light, normal sleeping aids to help them sleep through the hospital experience, which, again, I promote, and I actually ask for it. But again, it all comes down to the experience. The nurse has to be able to advocate for the patient. This nurse that he personally, he attacked, because he did attack her. And he knows full well how this works, the system works. He knows she's following orders that was given by a doctor. And so she was his scapegoat. To just go ahead and just unleash how he felt. Obviously, there's an emotional part of it here because he admits to the fact that he was in the hospital advocating for someone else. And I'm all about that. Come in, advocate for your loved ones because You know what? This is, I don't disagree with it, but I will tell you, don't go after the nurses just because you feel that strongly, especially if you're a physician. Because you and your group of people are the reason we do what we do, and especially the inexperienced nurses. Now, a more experienced nurse like myself would know better.
Got it. Okay. Now, we've talked in the past about some of the nurses that are being brought in from third world countries, for example, Haiti, Dominican Republic. They're bringing in nurses there. Filipino nurses usually are better trained, I think. And some of these nurses you've described as being dangerously untrained. They can't read an EKG. They don't get it. You've told us stories about it, and they're very dangerous. Now, to give this doctor a little bit of credit, I like his opening. I'm going to play the opening. It's just a minute long. Now, check this out.
Well, by the thousands every single day. I'm going to teach you what you need to do to prevent you or a loved one from dying negligently in one of these hospitals. I've received over 1,000 messages in the last 24 hours of patient horror stories for them or their family members of what hospital negligence has done and all the deaths that I have encountered in my medical career seeing this happen. First and foremost, if you leave an elderly individual in the hospital alone, you should be in prison for elder abuse. Why? It's the equivalent of leaving a six-month-old baby alone at home without anyone there. Nobody would ever do that. But
oh, yes, they would, and they have. But his point is well taken.
I can't disagree with that either. I mean, I think if you have an advocate that's going to advocate for you, I do agree, bring that advocate to the hospital. I do agree with that.
Right.
And again, there was one other thing he talked about. It was later on in that video. But let's address the issues he first. He talked about the heparin, the TI, to giving it three times a day. No, I get him. Get that. No reason for it at all if you're up and fully functional. I agree. Mm-hmm. So I didn't dispute that part. It's just the way he addressed it. Hospital delirium, I agree with that too. But there are certain times when that the nurses have to go in and do it per the orders of the doctors.
Or they lose their job. I understand. Yes, he's defending his own kind is what he's doing first and throwing the nurses out the window.
Correct. Now, he mentioned something else. The third thing, the vancomycin, is it thrown at you as the first choice of antibiotic? That's not true. I can basically tell you that's not true. It is brought in when the infection is not healing, and they do blood cultures that take quite some time to come back, but they will treat them with a broad-spectrum antibiotic until they actually fully know what's going on. Vancomycin is not the first choice. There are others.
Let me tell you something, Anne. Hold on. In England, and this is a fact, in many hospitals in England, Great Britain, they are using Allicin C as a frontline antibiotic in the hospitals. They don't tell anybody about it, but they're using it. They'll put it on the chart as whatever, but they are using it and getting phenomenal results with it. And it's harmless, and it will not go through your digestive tract and destroy your microbiome like any of the other commercially big pharma-produced antibiotics will do. So Allicin C is, every day it just gets to be more impressive to me, and I've been with it for almost 20 years. Go ahead.
And I would agree with that. I would actually agree with that, too, as Allicin C would be a great way to address a lot of infections. It would be a phenomenal way. In fact, this would probably gross a lot of people out, but I was in an inner-city hospital in New Jersey in my training, and they had a wound that was exceptionally bad, and actually none of the hardcore antibiotics, as it turns out, could actually kill the bug. So the infection got so bad, it was actually digging right up now into the spine, and it was going up the spine. And it was wide open. And he was getting treated by an Indian doctor. He was originally from India. And he started doing leech therapy. Now, I got to tell you, it's repulsive to me, but I have to do it. I mean, I got to tell you, it took a long, long time for that wound to heal. But that wound did heal, and it was through his treatment.
Right.
So,
oh,
like, if you think outside of the box, you can actually find physicians who think outside. But you see, here's this guy. I'd love to know what his stance is on the vaccines. I'd love to know where he stands on that. I'd love to know, did he agree with the treatment protocol with remdesivir? And did he agree with the fact that ivermectin didn't work? I mean, this is a really interesting individual to me because there's one side of the coin. Yeah, what he said is true. I don't dispute it. But on the other hand, how do you feel about the other stuff that was happening? You know,
we only had a tiny piece of the picture. You're right. And to be fair, we don't know. And that's a good thing that you bring out. Erica, let me ask you to step in here on this. And I want to kind of concentrate on our senior citizens, because what that doctor said, and he's right, you leave them alone in a hospital, you ought to be arrested for elder abuse. It's that dangerous now. And we're hearing stories about this. It was obviously an effort in the beginning to get rid of a lot of older Americans, period, and older people around the world. And they did. They succeeded.
And where nurses showed up, doctors didn't, by the way, when they were trying to get rid of them. A lot of nurses were trying to figure out what the hell's going on here. You know, why are they doing this? Because it was nurses who actually started to report to doctors, ivermectin is working. I was one of those nurses. I saw the change. I said, ivermectin is working. It actually is a game changer. It was early in the day when we were able to use ivermectin. And then, as I told you a few years back on the show, I walk in and on my unit, all of these big boxes around the nurse's desk, and I'm going, what's going on? And they're basically pharmacies picking up all the ivermectin from our floor and every other floor.
And taking it away.
Taking it away.
Well,
and that is what happened.
Yeah. Yeah. Erica, anything
you
want to
add here? And where were the doctors? Where were the doctors on that one?
Well, they were in
their
offices.
A lot of nurses who actually stood up and said, hang on a second, why are they doing this? And and the doctors poo-pooed it.
Well, I just remember the mandate that all professional healthcare employees get the bioweapon injection here. One-third of all of them said no, and they walked. They walked away from their jobs and their professional careers.
Yeah.
Two-thirds stayed. Most of those who are there now took the shots. Go ahead.
And the doctors who actually did try to treat them correctly, and I do remember there was two physicians out in California. They had they were on YouTube, and they had stuck their neck out. They lost their license over it. They came after them. They were two ER physicians, and they actually knew what they were talking about, and their licenses was taken from them. And you know what? I don't know. Will they ever get those licenses back? Probably not, because they spoke up against, you know, the big establishments that we so-called call the medical community, you know?
In California,
so, you know,
anything goes. All right, hold on a second. Erica, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Did you go out for some ice cream or anything? All right.
No, I've been listening intently.
All right, anything you want to add here? What are we seeing in terms of elder? And I like the term he used, elder abuse. I think that's appropriate, to abandon an older person. And I mean 50, 60, I don't care how old. Depends on their ability to still function is part of the measurement.
Yeah, they'll be taken advantage of course.
Exactly, yes. Yes.
But, you know, that goes for anybody who's just a babe in the woods when it comes to the medical system.
They're afraid of the medical system. They're afraid of it.
People on the contrary, they should be afraid, but in many cases they're not. They think they're going to a place where they're going to be taken care of.
Saved. No, they should be afraid. But afraid in terms of intimidation by the entire establishment. We need to give your mother this or that or the other thing, or she's probably going to die. And what's the average person going to do? Okay. They won't do
well, and especially, at least in the States, if they have the, you know, Cadillac insurance, so to speak, you know, an insurance plan that is, you know, the payouts are quite generous, they'll go to town on that.
Got it.
You know, a Medicare or Medicaid person.
Here's a question for Nurse Ann. from AJ, our friend, I won't use his last name. Do Nurse Ann's co-workers, especially the doctors, now understand and admit that the mRNA vaccines are causing serious problems? All right, so what about the professional health community, Ann? Are they beginning to openly admit that they've been involved with something that's damn dark and dirty?
No, the doctors won't stick their neck out at all. They'll go along with it. The only people you will actually hear say anything about against that vaccine are nurses. The nurses are the ones speaking out. The doctors, and there's a few others. I met a few from Florida this year, early this year, and unfortunately, she was one of the ones. She had to pray over the whole thing because she was mandated to take it, but to keep her livelihood, she was the only breadwinner in the house, so she took it. But she said she was a basket case because she was so worried about the fact that she had to take it at all. Very much against it. So if she could convince anybody not to take it, and if they didn't, their work wasn't taking it, then she spoke to them on that. And if the patient says, absolutely not, I'm not taking it, the doctors cannot force it on you. They cannot give it to you.
That should be read out loud to every patient who's entering a hospital. They need to have patient rights read to them. It's like your Miranda rights if you're arrested. The opposite direction should be pursued, to give them the option to accept or decline some form of treatment that they may already know about that's something they don't want, like remdesivir.
You can see the physicians are divided as much as the nurses are. You can see the doctors who are speaking out about the mRNA vaccine have to have, if they speak out against it, they're no longer practicing as physicians, or unless they have a private practice, and unless they're doing alternate media shows that are not mainstream, they're the ones that are getting the information out. Besides your show and a few other shows, which, again, I mean, your show is a phenomenal show. It gets a lot of information out there, but you compare it to Fox News and the stuff that's spewed out every night of the week that is a bunch of nonsense, that it goes into so many homes and people aren't listening. They are listening to Fox, but they're not actually investigating and opening up the world and saying, hang on a second, maybe we need to look into this a little bit more. Maybe we should listen to the nurse who told us not to do this at the hospital and not the crazy-ass doctor that's treating me. I mean, you know, it's a big, and the thing about it is I have to bring this up. 15, 20 years ago, maybe now, because I've been in this profession a while, if you questioned a doctor's order, when I was coming up the ranks, if you questioned a doctor's order, you were fired, because he got so mad or she got so mad. At the time, it was mostly men, but that's all changed now. That's a game changer now, too. But most of the time, it was a male-dominated profession for a while. But they would get so mad, they would go to your manager of your unit, wherever you worked, and they'd be like, "How dare you question my orders?" And then you might get a write-up, or you might actually get fired. I mean, there were two ways it could go. It depended on how bad the situation was, and it depended on how explosive he got. I do remember there was a cardiologist, and he was a big bully. And the nurses used to call him Boots. This is because he used to come in stomping in the unit, and you didn't need to wake the patients up because he did. So the thing is the bottom line is the physicians are as much of guilty about all of this as some of the nurses who've ended up giving this stuff. Now, honestly, the nurses in the hospitals, I have never given a vaccine. Or never will. And there's a lot of nurses who never have given a vaccine. The vaccines primarily are given outpatient. So it's nurses who work in pharmacies like in CVS or Walgreens or somewhere like that, that have probably got 2 years of experience and don't know, frankly, their ass from their elbow. But the nurses in the hospitals are asking the questions. They are asking the questions. And there are nurses who will do exactly what I will do and not give them the heparins, because what's the point? Okay, if they're walking and talking and doing everything they need to do, what's the point? What's the point of waking them up every 2 hours if they don't need to be woken up? There's no sense to that. But they'll also stick their neck out and ask a doctor, why are you giving this order? I mean, that's a great nurse. That's a nurse. That's a nurse you want on your team. That's a nurse who fights for your grandma and your mother and your husband and your sister. Those are the nurses. The nurses who question the doctors, because if they don't, you lose out. And the nurse is sticking her neck out. And let's never forget that part.
Got it. Okay. Very good. What do we want to ask Nurse Anne that comes from your research? Anything new that she might be familiar with that she can shed some light on? And all the work you do, reading and researching. Anything
you know,
new
I,
by
I
way
don't
of
see
protocols
anything.
That we're hearing about? Same
What's
old
that?
Stuff, right?
New, yeah,
any new
it's,
protocols?
It's... No, not really. I, you know, people have really run the gamut of everything that's been offered.
You haven't
I will say
any.
That some of the... The hyperbaric oxygen, you know, as I've said, seems to have a downside because in this situation where you're having trouble balancing oxidative processes in the body.
Here. That's right.
Yeah, and even molecular oxygen can be a problem in that situation. And I know one person who went gung-ho on the hyperbaric oxygen treatments and now has tinnitus and hyperacusis, which is, you know, every sound is amplified to a point where it's, you know, jarring. So what looked to be therapeutic, and it may still be therapeutic if it's very, you know, very well or judiciously used, can come back to bite you in this situation.
Right.
You know, because people are depleted. You know,
people forget
that you can become depleted in your own antioxidants, and then
correct.
Oxygen becomes toxic. You will generate free radicals
Very
within
important.
Your body from these, you know, unregulated metals, iron and copper and cobalt and whatever else is in there, and do a lot of damage,
right.
including
so
blood
these,
clotting in some cases.
Okay, that would be... Probably not an amyloid clot. That would be a traditional jelly clot, which can be
Well, both
helped.
Iron and copper can be a catalyst for, you know, misfolded proteins.
Uh-oh.
You know, through oxidative right. stress, yeah.
Right. That's the next thing I wanted to open. We have only 6 minutes left. Erica and I, for literally years, we've been talking about the great danger of the spike protein running into any normal protein in your bloodstream and causing that normal protein to misfold. Once it's misfolded, it doesn't return to its normal configuration. It now becomes a prion protein, and it can go to any major organ in the body, but if it goes to the brain, you all know what will happen. That's CJD. Now, the problem is it's not just the spike misfolding a protein. It's that misfolded protein that goes on to cause the misfolding of any other protein it may come into contact with. Can you spell cascade? All right, that's what's going on. Now, it may be, and we've speculated on this at least a couple years ago, that the action of triggering a prion cascade in the body may be the final cleanup blow to killing the person off. If they don't get him with the heart, with myocarditis, if they don't get him with the immunological failure, if they don't get them with any number of things, they may get them in the end, every time, eventually, with prions, because it doesn't take the spike alone to cause the cascade. Just remember that. Now, Nurse Anne, Are you seeing much more in the way of CJD cases, dementia cases, mental cases that could be caused by prions?
Yeah, I see a lot of more of people, they call them people that are acting out with more confusion and things like that.
Yelling, what, thrashing around, okay.
Yeah. They tend to want to label it as something other than CJD, though. That's the only problem. They'll label it as a, probably a result of a fall or delirium or something like that. They won't go to the level of investigation that they need to go to. So there is that happening. I actually, to Erica's response on the oxygen toxicity, that is a real problem, actually. I agree with Erica on that. Because in severe cases of oxygen toxicity, you can cause cell damage and death. And most often it happens in the lungs, eyes, and the central nervous system. And it can lead to huge injuries in causing respiratory distress. And that's what ends up, you end up buying yourself going on a ventilator to try and now basically see how we can adjust all of those levels. And you're getting poked in the wrist with arterial blood gases, and they're getting done frequently, which is a very painful test. Very, very painful if you're awake and you're aware to, but most of the time you aren't aware, you aren't even awake for it. But in general, it's a very painful test. That's a real problem as well. But you know, it's funny. The only time I've ever really seen the hyperbaric oxygen, obviously people are finding the treatment and doing it at home, is but we used to see it for the treatment of really bad wounds. They used to use it for wound healing a lot. But that's right. What it was initially, I think, designed for.
You know what it works best, Ann, hold on. You know what it works really well for? The so-called group A strep, flesh-eating bacteria, hyperbaric oxygen stops it cold in many cases. Flesh-eating bacteria are stopped cold with hyperbaric treatments. There are records of that.
Now, that I didn't know. I honestly didn't know that. But I do know that they use it for wound healing, trying to help with wound healing. But
there were three boys, little boys in Washington State who had, all of them, for some reason, group A strep. And they were losing. They had to have parts of their bodies cut off. To stop it, somebody said, well, let's try hyperbaric. And it stopped it in all three cases. They didn't end up quadruple amputees. They did lose parts of their body in at least two cases, as I remember. But that's a big deal. Go ahead.
Well, actually, if I ever come across that situation in the hospital, I might actually bring it up, but I'd be a little bit wary now because people are abusing
it. You have to be very wary.
The wrong situation. You see,
Erica,
the wrong situations
when,
now.
Erica, when would you not want to tell somebody that hyperbaric might save your life if they have been vaxxed for openers?
Because
they've got over-oxidation going on already. So,
So when the body has been depleted of its own antioxidants, the glutathione, the superoxide dismutase and catalase, pumping additional oxygen into that situation where there's been a restriction of oxygen particularly, then you get this reperfusion injury.
Mm-hmm.
And just, a free radical storm. And you can do a lot of damage that way.
Right.
They say that if you are dealing with these perfusion issues and you don't have blood that can really carry oxygen, you really want to load up on antioxidants like vitamin C, vitamin E, glutathione before you do it.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, there's no guarantee that you're not going to induce some damage.
Yeah, if you're injected with this crap, it's best probably to avoid it.
It feels really good. As this person I know that jumped on board with it, and he thought he was being cautious and conservative.
Yeah, see, I'm a little bit wary about recommending it, too, because of, especially since the majority of people I'm working with are vexed. Could I be bringing, adding on another problem to an existing problem they already have?
If they're not vaxxed and they've got some intractable surface, we'll call it, infection, like group A strep, it'd probably be worth a shot. But if they're vaxxed or heavily shed upon, you'd have to be, these times have changed. Everything's changed now. You just don't know.
Well, I guess it really has to be... It has to be individualized. I mean, I do know of cases where it's been literally life-changing for people. You know, it gave them their lives back. But other people, they weren't ready for it for whatever reason.
Okay.
It didn't agree with them.
Final comment, Ann. We're running late. We got to say goodnight.
Final comment, I said it a long, long time ago, and it was right out of the Bible. I said this, and people should have listened, but they didn't listen. The life of the flesh is in the blood. Everything is happening in the blood. Trace it back.
Yeah, that's the first target of the bioweapon.
Yeah.
And the virus.
So that's my final.
Right. Very good. Okay. Thank you again for all you do. Be safe, and I hope your back continues to improve. That's a very important. Be well.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Jerry.
Be well.
Erica and Jeff, and it's good to talk to you guys again.
Okay.
Likewise. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Night. You know, she's right there in the trenches, and many of you listening are professional healthcare, nurses, techs, whatever. You're right in the business, too. You get it, or you wouldn't be listening to this program, and it can be very frustrating. I wouldn't want to work around this situation under any circumstances. No. All right, anything else to add? We have just maybe a minute left. That's about it.
Yeah, I can't think of anything. That was a nice update.
Yeah, that's helpful. Things are not what they were 10, 20 years ago. It's all changed now because of shedding, because of the injections, and because of the bioweapon virus itself. Think about it. These are all compromising, terribly compromising factors, which are now endemic to our species. They did it. They did it.
Mm.
All right. Thank you, young lady. Talk soon.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff. Good night, everyone.
Okay. We'll be back in 6 minutes, whatever, in just a few minutes. And we're going to talk again about you still have a chance. And if you're not paying attention and you have no food, you won't have a chance. And we want you all to have a chance. So food is the most important thing you could put away right now. Food and water, of course. All right, hold on, and we will continue.